Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabisch. I'm joined today by Max Galka, who is a man of mystery, shall we say. A man who has created lots of really cool visualizations. You may have seen his recent project, A History of U.S. Immigration. We're going to talk about that and some other very cool projects he's been working on. Max, welcome to the show.
Well, glad to be here, John.
Thanks for coming on. Why don't we start, since I'm not sure a lot of people in the data viz field, I'm not sure they know a lot about you. So why don't we start by having you talk a little bit about yourself, and I want to dive into some of these great projects.
Sure. So I have, as I imagine a lot of people that you speak to do, I have quite a varied background. I've worked in a lot of different industries in a lot of different ways. So I started my career trading mortgage-backed securities, which had very little to do with data. That was kind of the stereotypical trader job of doing tons of trades all throughout the day, very stressful. And I sort of, from there, made my way to working with more complex financial products. Mm-hmm. So I spent most of my career trading insurance-linked derivatives, which is really sort of the opposite end of the trading spectrum. So instead of doing 200 trades a day, it would be maybe one or two trades a month. Mm. So at that point, it's really much less a trading job than it is a modeling job.
Right.
It's looking at these trades and really understanding what the risk is. So that's really where most of my experience working with data comes from. So modeling things like hurricanes, earthquakes, stuff like that is just very, very data intensive.
Right.
So that's where I spent the bulk of my career. Since then, I have worked on a number of projects, startups, I guess, although not all of them are revenue generating. So I don't know if you can call them startups, but I started a real estate data related business.
Well, they started. So, you know.
Yeah.
You've got that. So they've started. Okay.
Yes. They started. So I guess that makes them startups.
Right.
So I started a real estate data related business called Revaluate, which I exited about a year ago. Since then, I have worked on a freedom of information related project called FOIA Mapper, which I launched earlier this year. Metrocosm is the site where I do my data visualization work, which I've been doing for about a year now, and have another project coming up called Truth from Data that we'll be launching shortly.
Right. So I want to talk about both the FOIA Mapper and the Truth from Data project, but let's start with some of the data visualization projects you've done. The most recent one is the history of U.S. immigration. Can you talk a little bit about why you created that visualization and what your thought process was as you were creating it? So for those who haven't seen it, it's a map of the world with circles flowing back and forth from the different countries into the U.S. So you just talk a little bit about the project and how you built it and what your thought process was going into it?
Sure. So what I like about doing these data visualizations and what the work I do on Metrocosm, I sort of enjoy digging into, you know, sometimes political questions or other questions that are out there and looking at it from a very analytical, data-driven perspective. So this is one that I've looked at with all the discussion right now about immigration. I wanted to dig into the data and kind of really see, okay, you know, what is the reality about immigration to the U.S.? How many people are coming over? Why are they coming over? Where are they coming from? Mm-hmm. And it turns out there's actually a very, very rich set of data that the government makes public about that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think I don't get too much into political views when I post stuff. I try to keep it pretty objective and let mm-hmm. people reach their own conclusions. But really, my view is that some of the discussion going on about immigration has gotten a little bit out of hand. You know, I fully understand where people are coming from with their illegal immigration mm-hmm. and problems that's causing for certain people, certain families. But, you know, a lot of the talk right now is kind of getting into legal immigration. Putting a pause on that. And I think that's just makes no sense from so many different levels. I think if there is a message that I wanted to communicate with this graphic is that, you know, we're really a country of immigrants. And, you know, that's sort of a cliche. You hear people say that a lot. But, in reality, I would imagine in this map it shows everyone who's come over here since 1820, when the country had about 10 million people, total population. So I I would be pretty shocked if anyone in the country is not descended from somebody who's come over since then. So, you know, when you see comments out there, people saying things like, you know, we've been opening the door to the world for the last 200 years. I think the we is sort of, regardless of what your ultimate political view is, I think that we is sort of misplaced.
Yeah.
It's really, all of us had ancestors that came over here looking for a better life. I think should have a little more respect for the fact that, really just for our history.
Sure.
We're allowed to come here.
So can I ask a little bit about the process you went through to create this particular visualization? So how did you end up in both a map format and then also an animated format? I think that's what sort of people really got engaged with, is it actually sort of the animation allows you to look at the data and the visualization in kind of a different way than, you know, your sort of standard interactive where you click and you move things around, that sort of thing. So how did you end up in that particular approach?
Well, that's something that I'm really big on is animated visualization. I think Mark Zuckerberg, this is just general for content, but he made some comment about within the next few years, the majority of content online is going to be video. It's going to be animated.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just makes sense. I mean, it gives you an entire additional dimension by which to, when it comes to visualizations, to communicate information. I mean, I think making graphics animated doesn't require that much additional work. And it just makes the entire dimension richer and more engaging and clearer.
Right. And so you're building these in D3 in JavaScript?
This one, it uses D3 all the way through, but D3 is traditionally used with SVG.
Yeah.
So SVG is what I used for the background map.
Okay.
But the problem with SVG, where it's limited, is with the, you can't have too many things moving around on the screen at the same time. So that's where Canvas comes in. So the little particles that are moving around, those are done using Canvas.
Gosh. Cool. So let me pivot just a little bit, because you've also written on maps. You've written that great blog post. You're a big fan of cartograms.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about what you see as the advantages and disadvantages of cartograms? We are now entering, or we've been in the political cycle for a while. We're going into the general now. We're going to see lots of choropleth maps with reds and blues. We'll see people yelling about that in different ways. So what about the cartogram intrigues you, and do you see that as maybe that'll be the standard map that we'll be looking at soon?
I don't know if it'll be the standard map. I think for certain purposes, and it's I think the political maps is a very good example.
Mm-hmm.
They make a lot more sense in some cases. So for political maps, when you're looking at elections, I think it should be the standard. It's something that we're all familiar with is looking at the country in the red and blue states, the areas broken out. Right. And the country always looks like entirely red with a few little patches of blue. It's always funny. Okay. How are these elections always so close?
Right. The whole map is red except for these states on the coast.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you do the color by smaller regions, by county, it's even more exaggerated.
Yeah.
Because you have all the dense little cities going Democrat and everything else Republican. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's misleading to do that, but it doesn't really accurately convey the information. You know, you can have, you do have gigantic segments of the population that live within tiny little areas. When you just use color on a map, it just conveys no sense of magnitude. You know, color is great for when you're comparing two different areas and trying to say, is this area more than this area? For example, if you're looking at two different states and you're looking at the populations, color them accordingly. You could say, okay, does state A have a greater population than state B? And you can answer that very easily just looking at color. But what you can't really communicate well with color is how much bigger is the population of state A than state B. Yeah, that's really the advantage of cartograms. You can also use color.
Mm.
So you can still do that. But distorting the dimensions of the regions just is a much better way of communicating magnitude.
There's a trade-off there, right? Like you get this, the color on the map is perhaps more accurately distributed. But then you distort the geography. And I feel like that's what people love about maps, that they know that they live in Buffalo, New York, and they can go see that point in New York. And then when you distort the map, it's harder to see. So,
yes.
I mean, maybe there is no balance. Maybe there is no right way. I mean, how do you get people to engage with a map where it doesn't really resemble the geography that they're familiar with?
Yeah. I think there's a really simple solution for that. This is what I do on my website is you make them animated. And this kind of gets right back to what we were discussing before about the animation. Is if you animate cartograms, so they start off with the geography you're familiar with, and then they change to distorted.
Yeah.
by seeing that transition, you can pretty clearly tell which area is which. I made a map like that that shows the total property value of every county in the U.S. Just looking at the cartogram itself, there would really be no way of knowing which little area is which. Maybe by looking at the whole thing, you could tell that it's the U.S., although even that, I think, is not so clear.
Mm-hmm.
But by animating it, you can see very clearly where everything comes from. You can see Manhattan, which starts off as like barely visible, grows into a pretty big share of the country.
So when you're building the animation in a visualization like that, where you're transitioning between sort of traditional map and a cartogram map, what are you thinking about when it comes to the timing for each of the different views that, that someone's going to see? So they see sort of a standard map and then it morphs into another map. How are you thinking about how long each piece of that visualization should show up on someone's screen?
There's something I've given too much thought to. I think as I've done it, I've tried to just make it long enough to...
Where you're comfortable and...
Just make it clear. Yeah. You can see the map and see where each place is and then be able to follow the transition to what it looks like in the cartogram.
Right. Very cool. Well, speaking of making things clear, I want to talk about another project you have. This is your FOIA Mapper project that you mentioned earlier. This is a project funded by the Knight Foundation. It won a Prototype Fund Award. So can you give folks a background on that? It certainly has a really interesting background, not just what it does, but actually a really cool background to it.
Yeah, FOIA is something that I've used for several years now, and I've used in many different capacities. So I mentioned that I used to model hurricanes and earthquakes. A lot of that data I was able to get using Freedom of Information. So specifically, what I really needed to build those models was accurate information about the amount of damage that was done by past disasters on a very granular level. That kind of information is really not available online, but I discovered that you can get pretty detailed information by requesting it using Freedom of Information. Sort of hard to describe, but as I got looking at Freedom of Information, I found it to be something that it's just really striking how much information is out there and how powerful this law is. It's used by only a very small number of people, but the amount of information that is out there is just that you have access to the Freedom of Information is just enormous.
Can you talk a little bit about the process of actually submitting a FOIA request? Because I think perhaps one of the reasons that there are so few requests is that people think it's this huge administrative burden to go in and make this request. But I don't think that's quite the case, right?
That's right. Yeah. I think that there are some people that will spend lots of time laboring over the request to make sure it's worded just perfectly. But in reality, doing that only kind of is a marginal difference.
Yeah.
Terms of whether you get the information or not. Really, you can make a request is the simplest thing in the world. You find the email address for the government agency that has the information you want. You write in plain English what you want, and really, that's it. it's that simple. Yeah, you know, like when I started this project, a lot of people, when they asked me what it does, you know, they were asking me if it helps you make the FOIA requests, which... I sort of find to be, I don't know, sort of an odd question.
Because right. If you could write an email, you can make a FOIA request, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just type out what you want.
Right.
That's really it.
So what does the FOIA mapper do then?
So what does make requests difficult, what I found, is that there's no directory online that tells you what information each government agency has. So that's really the time-consuming part, is finding the information that's out there. Requires going to agency websites and looking through reports, and maybe there's a mention of some database in a report, and then you submit a request for it, and maybe that request gets denied, but in the process, you figure out more information about what this thing actually is. So that's really the challenge. So what I have done is I have sort of gone after the problem in two different ways. The first way is, I guess I would call it like a FOIA hack, which is what they call FOIA logs, which is just a list of requests that other people have submitted to an agency. So you can see exactly what other people asked for, you can see who asked for it, and that gives you some clues as to what information this agency has. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I've gone out and requested that information from a bunch of different agencies, said, hey, I'd like to see every request you've received over the last few years.
So it's requesting the requests?
Yes.
As easy as making an actual FOIA request?
Yeah. In fact, it's one of the easiest ones to make because every government agency is familiar with these requests. Government agency is. So if you say, I request your FOIA logs for last year, then they know exactly what you're talking about. Okay. A good chance they already have it processed and on hand and ready to send out. Mostly they arrive in PDF format, which is kind of a pain in the neck to deal with. Extracting information from PDFs is, before I started doing it, I had no idea what, and I still don't understand why it's so difficult, but it is really challenging.
I have to get someone from Adobe on the show to find out.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I look forward to seeing that. So I took this information, I extracted it, put it into a database, and made it searchable. So you can search by topic, type in, I think some of the examples I gave up there, Hillary Clinton, and you can see what information people are requesting about Hillary Clinton, UFOs, any topic of interest.
And is this a living project? Do you continually update it, or is it sort of now, well, so it needs to be continually updated, I would guess.
Yeah. That, you know. Yes. Yeah. So it is. And there's another side of the project too, which I think is the area that I originally envisioned and where I think it has the most room to grow. There is documentation online about what information government agencies have. Or I should say some of it's online, some of it you need to actually request, similar to the FOIA logs. And it's kind of covered in a number of different kinds of documents that aren't really intended as like a directory of information, of databases, but they do contain that information. So, for example, the information that's on there now is what they call record disposition schedules. So agencies, for every record system they have, they have to decide, get approved, the amount of time that they're going to keep the information and what they're going to do with it once that time period runs out. So that information, I've gone out and collected, and these documents have descriptions of each of these record systems. So that's another database that I have that's searchable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a number of really different kinds of documents out there like that, like what they call RFPs, when an agency actually builds these record systems. They have to give the instructions to the person who builds it, and those instructions give you a pretty good detailed description of what's in this database. So, yeah, I mean, in concept, it's one thing to know that if you're looking for information about, throw out an arbitrary topic, noise, which is a problem. It's something I dealt with in my real estate startup, is that noise is something that really bothers people.
Right.
So if you're looking for information on noise, you might find out that the FAA has information about airplane noise. They have an airplane noise database. But actually understanding what information is in there is really another challenge.
Yeah.
So my hope is to get enough documentation about these different record systems that someone can type in noise, for example, and they'll see a list of record systems. So they'll say, okay, the FAA has information about airplane noise. And then they can dig in further and see, okay, great. This is exactly the information they have. So now I can ask them for a very, very precise request with exactly the information that I want.
I gotcha. I see. So you're actually helping people craft their FOIA requests.
Yes. In a sense, yes.
Yeah.
So FOIA requests are very easy to write.
Right.
If you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So this is giving you the information about helping you figure out what it is to ask.
Right. Very good. Let's talk about another project that you have, which is not quite out yet. It's something called Truth from Data. So tell us a little bit about that and when folks are going to be able to see it.
So Truth from Data is a business I'm starting with my co-founder, Lee Godfrey, who is a guy I've known for a long time and was actually my first boss when I started my career. The two of us both have a lot of experience working with data in a lot of different industries and a number of different capacities. And just very generically, in concept, we both see just enormous opportunity out there with data analytics.
Mm.
And it sounds sort of generic in that sense, and it is. But there is so much data out there that could be helpful in making decisions and generating value and solving problems. It really needs specialized help in so many different areas in terms of finding the data, which is sort of what FOIA Mapper is about. In terms of organizing it and cleaning it, in terms of putting together the architecture to store it, and then I'd say from there, both analyzing it and communicating it visually, visualizing the data. Each of those steps is not trivial.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really just a huge opportunity out there to help people with these, make get value from the data. that's really what the business is about at a very high level. The first project we're working on deals with discriminatory lending, both from the perspective of identifying it and helping to address the problem, and also from the perspective of the mortgage companies, really helping them to identify whether they are doing it and dealing with the regulatory issues that surround that. So there is a very large data set called, it's the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act data, which includes for every year, nearly every mortgage application in the country. So the first project involves digging into that data and looking for different kinds of patterns that come out of it.
Great. Well, yeah, I mean, there's clearly a need for more data analytics and, of course, data visualization and the whole spectrum of working with data. So good luck with that new project. And I'm looking forward to seeing more things on your site, Microcosm. This has been really great, really interesting. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad to be here, John.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again for everyone for listening and tuning in. That's it for this week's episode. So until next time, this has been the Policy Viz Podcast.